All right, we're back. This is Who's Talking, and we're gonna sort of beef up the bumper music on the way back. Next segment here, we're excited to have a former contributor and annual contributor to Who's Talking. We kid him a lot, but he is beloved in this studio, Vern Inge from LeClaire Ryan. Vern, so many topics to jump to. Some of you may remember we've had Joe Sroba in here with Vern, so we got the the sports agent perspective in addition to the sports attorney perspective. Tonight we've got two former students that took a little sports law, which gives us which gives us very little right, but maybe a lot of curiosity here in the studio. But Vern, talk to us a little bit about where is the whole UNC academic slash improper benefits scandal? Where is it today?
Well, I'm still recovering from being a little poorer because I've got to now buy dinner for Vince Dalton. But, yeah, UNC's got bigger problems than me, I'm afraid. It's going to be very interesting how that plays out because we've got a situation there where the biggest problem is not with the NCAA, but the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, which gives them their accreditation. And if and they've given them the UNC the most severe penalty they can, which gives them 12 months of probation, which is a little different than every other type of probation. It's if you don't clean up your act in 12 months, you'll lose your accreditation, which means that UNC will no longer be an accredited college and therefore couldn't be part of the NCAA, would have all sorts of other issues. Surely they'll clean it up in the next 12 months, but that's the biggest problem hanging over UNC's head with this scandal that keeps, quite frankly, getting worse and worse.
Yeah, the thing that I always think about is I refer to UNC as an NCAA show pony. You know, I mean, as they always say, if you go to a 7-Eleven in Missoula, Montana, you can get a soft drink and a UNC cup.
That's right.
You know, so, I mean, they're really kind of a brand portal nationally. So I guess I worry that somehow they're going to get a slap on the wrist rather than a real smack. But you see it otherwise or what?
Well, it's difficult for the NCAA to do that given the way this keeps playing out. And they've now charged them with a lack of institutional control, which is the worst charge that can be levied against an institution. It's the Penn State charge is the big example there, but there are lots of others. And, you know, of course, SMU got the death penalty with that charge. And
Clemson years ago came within a hair of the death penalty.
Yep, so that's right. So that's the worst charge, and the NCAA has levied that amongst four or five other charges that total of five charges levied against UNC. And now it's just a waiting game to see what the NCAA is actually going to do for a sanction.
Now, you know what happened to Jim Boeheim is he basically has announced his retirement 2 or 3 years from now, whenever it is. You expect the same thing to come from Roy Williams?
I'd be surprised at that, but who knows? The problems obviously predated Roy Williams at some level, and it's a huge institutional problem there based on all the things that have come out. And so it's possible, but Roy Williams certainly is going to fight.
Of course, how much of this was football and how much of it was basketball?
It's clearly came both. It's and not only football and basketball, but now in August they had reports come out that women's basketball was implicated and they had new allegations against men's soccer that were recruiting violations. But once you start looking into these things, everything unwinds. And so UNC is running into trouble in all sports.
And then very recently it's been reported that a former player had improper contact with athletes on the team and provided loans. And so this thing is continuing to expand and people are coming out of the woodwork. And we don't want to see any school in the NCAA ever have to deal with these types of situations. But the fact of the matter is,
we don't.
This has been. Well, Jim,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know. You always kid. So we're talking about a serious topic.
I can
topic
name
here.
One or two, but that's we'll let that go.
Duke? I don't know.
So the point I was trying to get to before the clown got going is the fact that, in essence, this could really be a huge black mark on the ACC. Not just a penalty in North Carolina. You know, and we're talking about it. This will be a couple of years of no bowl games. A couple of years of no NCAA basketball play. Some of the other sports are going to get dinged now that this news has come out. In addition, there will be scholarship restrictions. There will be scholarship recruiting. There will be fines galore because the NCAA attorneys and investigators have spent years now trying to uncover this. And initially, North Carolina denied. Now, there have been numerous articles, and I've read quite a few things in the Carolina Alumni Review. And so now they're facing this thing internally, and they're making a lot of changes. And here for the people there in their administration that are doing that. The question to you, Vern, is how much does Carolina have to do to get things right and to hopefully get a lesser string of penalties from the NCAA?
Well, clearly, Frank, you're right that it's a major issue, and they typically schools go out and self-penalize. They come up with their own plan as what to do for a sanction and say they've already implemented this, the NCAA, and hope that's enough. Very tough for Carolina to do in this instance, but they'll probably give that a try. That's going to be their effort to put all those things into effect that you just mentioned, all of those sanctions themselves. The problem is, as you point out, it is a problem for the conference. For bowl games and NCAA appearances, that's a lot of money for the conference. And teams not going are going to cost the conference money. In addition, it's the 2005 NCAA championship in basketball, men's basketball for Carolina. 10 of their 15 players were African American studies majors, which is, of course, the department that has been labeled basically a sham. So does that mean that 10 players on that team, probably amongst your better players, were actually not attending classes at the time? It appears to be the case. Do they lose that NCAA championship? And that's probably something the school will recommend for itself, given the circumstances. If that happens, that doesn't look very good for the conference.
Speaking of the classes, the basketball now is one and done. And you wonder, these kids that are going to leave, I guess they sign up for classes and don't go in the second semester? Or, I think there's just a whole lot of academic issues in the NCAA that
Kentucky,
they got to take at.
Kentucky, and then most recently Duke, might be examples of that.
That's right, and it's raising questions about whether freshmen should even play varsity again, which, from years ago. It's because that's the question is you take your freshman curriculum, you can flunk out, right, and still be eligible to play for that 1 year that you're doing at Kentucky.
Well, let's hope they can put the kibosh on that. I think it would probably be a good thing to roll back and introduce the concept once again where freshmen have to sit out that year and get acclimated to school, take classes, get to know their academic responsibilities and get acclimated, and then they're eligible year two. And I think that would erase a lot of problems.
It would help, but it's not going to happen.
What about the payment or the subsidy piece? Would freshmen still get that, you think?
Well, I think they'd have to. And let's talk about the stipend, and I think that's a good point, Chris. This is, this year's the beginning of this, and we've already seen where schools are trying to figure out ways to recapture the monies that they're supposedly promised to pay in addition to the scholarships, where schools like Virginia Tech started a fine system where they were going to fine players for missing classes or missing practices or missing team meetings. And fortunately, the AD, I think his name is Babcock.
Yeah, right. With Babcock. Yeah, I really think that was more of a disciplinary thing than a financial.
It doesn't matter. It was an attempt to reclaim that money.
Well, they weren't going to reclaim that much through the fines. I think it was a discipline. But talk a little bit about the so-called full cost of attendance and explain that to our listeners and maybe what some of the implications of that are.
Well, sure, it's very complicated, but it's the long and short of it is that the NCAA now allows institutions to pay the players more, not just give them a scholarship, but to pay the full cost of attendance, quote-unquote, at the university. And so that can change. It's a number that can be fudged, quite frankly, because what does it actually cost to attend any university is something that the school calculates itself.
So that's an arbitrary number for each school?
It's theoretically not arbitrary. It should be accurate, but the school can fudge it some. And each school has a different number, and that's the amount of assistance that can be provided to the players. And quite frankly, what it is, it's a response to the feeling that players are not being treated fairly by the institutions because they provide more value to the institution than they're getting back. And so the Northwestern players unionizing, for example, which ultimately failed, but those efforts have all brought about the NCAA to look at this and say we need to allow more for the players, so they allow now the full cost of attendance.
Well, some of it was that kid from Connecticut that played basketball on their championship team a couple of years ago that made some comment. He wanted to go out and have a snack at midnight, and the athletic dining facility was closed. He didn't have any money to go out and get anything, and all of a sudden they come up with this whole scheme of providing additional stipends to athletes, and they're doing it not only for the revenue sports, but for all the sports at most places.
That's right. And it is difficult, quite frankly. The NCAA scholarship athletes, it's very difficult because of the restrictions that are put on the players. You can't have an alumnus buy you dinner And of course, me as a non-athletic student, I could have done that if anyone was interested.
I'm sure there were a lot of people. But, you know, in my day, we used to have a thing called a summer job, you know, where you actually made a couple of bucks. But I think there were too many boosters that were taking advantage of that, you know, and you had phantom jobs.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, they stopped that.
That's right. That's exactly right. Can't now work to make your money, so you got to play football or basketball to do it.
So, Brad, chime in on this. Do you remember what the rules were? And didn't you get some meal money for certain weekends and road trips? And how did all that work out?
Did you get the $500 handshake?
No $500 handshakes for me. No $500 handshakes for me.
Not at Virginia, at least.
Not at the University of Virginia. So the way it worked for us was we obviously had a full meal plan, and I think maybe as times evolved, there's been dining halls, had some later hours and things like that. And obviously, I didn't miss many meals when I was in college. But the one thing that we did get was on game days, you got a $12 stipend because you missed a meal and you're going to be away. So that was really the only stipend outside of the full scholarship that we got, was that $12 on game days.
So they've come a long way now. And now who is going to possibly oversee this? That's the question, Vern. Well, and by the way, we're speaking with Vern Inge of LeClaire Ryan. Vern, who's going to oversee these schools? Are they going to self-regulate?
Well, of course they are. That's the whole, we just talked about Carolina. The NCAA expects the schools to regulate themselves. And if there's a lack of institutional control, that's the worst sanction or worst event that the school can run into. So the NCAA expects them to regulate all of this themselves. And then when they mess up, the NCAA will step in with sanctions. But the NCAA will not and should not come in and try to regulate that on the universities.
Well, the problem is that if you're the president of Ohio State or the president of the University of Alabama, do the alumni listen to you, or do they listen to Urban Meyer or Nick Saban? You know,
they follow the football coach, no question about it. But if you lose control, and those coaches too, if they don't have control of the institution, they may end up like Jim Boeheim. That's the issue, and so they're also on the hot seat if these things. The African American Studies Department doesn't have real classes, the coaches get in trouble too.
Which is still mind-boggling that happened. Vern, these days there's a lot of developments and changes that have been going on with the sports agents. In previous years, you've been on our show, and we've talked about runners providing loans and secret envelopes here and there, and then kids finding that they're trapped in a relationship or a contract that they weren't even aware of. What's happening these days? Have there been any changes?
The union in the NFLPA is trying to crack down on that. They put some pretty good changes in that regulate runners, and runners are folks that are paid by the agents to go out, frankly, and recruit the players. They go out and play video games with them and spend a lot of time with the players. And they've now basically gotten rid of runners. If somebody is going to be out there working for an agent, they need to be actually certified by the NFLPA as an agent. In most cases, there's some limited exceptions. And so the union's made some nice changes there. But as far as the loans go, quite frankly, the union views it as, even though it's a violation of the regulations, the agent regulations, to offer a player something of value to sign with the agent, the union allows it and will permit those players to receive loans. So it happens now every year with big-name players going early in the draft. They're getting loans from the agents to induce the players to sign with those agents. That still hasn't stopped.
Well, somehow, some way, that has got to be eradicated, because it is corrupting college athletics. It's always been a problem, and they've got to build some walls. I mean,
Quick question. In baseball, if you come, you're committed to 3 years. Any movement in that direction regarding college basketball?
Well, it doesn't seem to be. Obviously, they've decided on 1 year and seem pretty happy with that. There's huge differences in the sports and the pros too, because in baseball now, of course, you might spend 3 years in college, but you're learning the game. And in baseball, you're going to spend a lot of years in the minors. Even if you're a number one draft pick, you're going to spend usually a few years at least in the minors. Football, you go straight into the NFL, right? And basketball, straight in the NBA. So it's a totally different economic system and a lot of incentive on the players to leave and go directly out of high school, for example, in basketball now. And so the colleges want them for that 1 year.
All right, let's jump in real quick here and do the Olympic sports report so that we can do a little bit more discussion with Brad and Vern after this next break. So Chris Sill with the Olympic Sports Report.
All right, thank you, Frank. Looking at the Olympic Sports Report, UVA men's golf finished fifth place in the Northern Intercollegiate, and former UVA All-American Denny McCarthy has been named to the USGA by the USGA to the 2015 Walker Cup team. Women's Cup or Women's Golf finished the Cougar Classic in sixth place last week. Men's Soccer, number 5 Hoos tied Duke 2-2 over the weekend. Play host to JMU on Tuesday night at Klockner. Women's Soccer, number 1 UVA Women beat number 8 UCLA. Draw to number 19 Pepperdine and beat Harvard and ODU in the last week. Pretty productive week for them. Men's tennis, Ryan Shane qualified for the U.S. Open, but lost in the first round in cross country. Men are ranked 2nd in the ACC and women 3rd in the preseason poll. Field hockey, number 6 Virginia beat number 11 Louisville, number 15 Princeton, and Miami of Ohio last week, all on the road. And women's volleyball finished 3-0 in the Cavalier Classic last week.
Well done. And let's also do the LeClaire Ryan play of the game real quick. By committee of one, it was decided that the touchdown by Albert Reed down at the goal line where the offensive line bulled through and gave UVA a very exciting lead in that late in the fourth quarter with about 2 minutes to go in the game. Who would have ever believed that UVA would have had the lead in less than 2 minutes to go in the game against the Fighting Irish? All right, we're going to go to break. We come back, more Vern Inge and more Brad Barnes. Stay with us. Final segment of Who's Talking up next.